Welcome to this week's episode of Double Nine Minutes. I'm Sam Lau here with Eric Dahl.
Yeehaw!
All right, everyone. It's July 26th, just after 10 a.m. So we're doing the early recording as we do for the summer edition here. Pretty interesting week that we've had in markets as well as macro. And then, of course, we've got the opening ceremonies that just started either last night or in terms of for those that are watching the recording, it just started. So be sure to tune in and hopefully catch, you know, Snoop Dogg lighting the Olympic flame there. You know, so he was a torchbearer during part of that that ceremony. So it's always interesting. Is he'll also be a commentator on the NBC portion. It's always nice to hear what he does there and bring his own little take. But in terms of where we are in the markets, pretty much a mixed bag this week. Looking at the S&P 500, that's down about half a point on a week-to-date basis. Still up just about 16% on a year-to-date basis. Right now, as we speak, it's see about, let's call it eight sectors in the green for the week-to-date portion. Leading the way is healthcare, up almost 2% on the week. Utilities, financials, industrials, and materials, just a little bit behind each, up about 1.5% on the week. Comm services, technology, and consumer discretionary, you know, the so-called sectors that hold a lot of those positive momentum mega cap names, some of the Magnificent Seven, those continue to be some of the worst performers for the month of July. Right now, those three sectors are all down. Let's see, comm services and technology down about 1.5%, and consumer discretionary down almost 2.5%. So some of this this reversal of that positive momentum from those mega cap names is giving way to the rise of some of the small caps and the value-based names. And that's indicative through the week-to-date performance with the Russell 1000 representing large caps down about half a point. Russell 2000 up over 3% thus far on the week-to-date basis. Similar type theme again with the growth sector. Russell 1000 growth underperforming the value counterpart. Right now it's down 1.8% relative to the value sector. The Russell 1000 value up about 1.5%. And you know, Dahl, you and I were talking about it on the desk this week, but the S&P 500 had its first down over 2% day since going back to those dark days of 2022. So it's been a while since we've seen that. We'll see if we have more to come, but it doesn't seem like it today as the S&P 500 is right now at about 1.5% positive return on the date. Moving over to fixed income land, starting with treasuries, we've got a bit of a rally at the short end of the curve. With the two-year treasury note right now at with a yield of about 4.4, that's about 13 basis points lower in yield relative to where we stood last Friday. The 10-year note about flat at a yield of 4.20. And then the bond with a yield of 4.5, that's about flat as well relative to the previous week. So what all that meant to the broader bond index as measured by the Bloomberg bond aggregate, that's up about a quarter point on a week-to-date basis, holding on to this, you know, adding to it, rather, this positive year-to-date number. Right now, I'm seeing it up about 90 basis points on the year-to-date basis. Almost a clean sweep in terms of positive performers. The one sector that's down is bank loans, down about 10 basis points on the week-to-date basis, but leading the other way in terms of positive returns is the emerging market sovereign debt market up 60 basis points, followed by high yield U.S. Corporates up 40 basis points. And then for those sectors within the Bloomberg U.S. bond aggregate, we've got both the treasuries as well as agency mortgage-backed securities market up about a quarter point each, and then IG corporate credit up 15 basis points. And then moving over to commodity land, we've got the Bloomberg Commodity Index is down 1.2% week to date, still holding on to this positive return of just over 50 basis points, though. So we'll see what the next week will bring in terms of whether or not the commodity complex can maintain the positive return for the year through the first 7 months of the year. Looking at WTI front month futures for crude oil, that's down about 3.5% on the week. They're still up 8% on a year-to-date basis when we're looking at the price return there. But WTI front month contracts did fall below $80 a barrel of WTI. Right now, it's sitting at $77.50. And then looking at the gold market, gold lost a little bit of its luster this week after a pretty strong performance for the last few trading sessions, as well as the prior week. But it's down 50 basis points right now on the week-to-date basis, still up 15% for the year-to-date. And then right now, we still haven't managed to close, at least on the Friday, above the 2400 mark. Right now, it's sitting at $2,390 a troy ounce of gold. So with that roundup of the markets, Eric, can you kick us off on what happened this week in macro land?
Yeah, pretty rich week in macro land. So some interesting stuff to dive into. Wednesday on July 24th, we got the wholesale inventories, and the June preliminary came in at 0.2%. The estimate was 0.5, so a mixed bag. When you look at the other side, you got retail inventories month over month came in at 0.7%, a beat of the estimate by 0.2%. So kind of interesting there, the little bit of a dichotomy between wholesale inventories and retail inventories. On Wednesday, we also got the S&P Global U.S. Manufacturing PMI, and that came in weak. That came in at 49.5. The estimate was 51.6. But on the flip side, the S&P Global U.S. Services PMI was a big beat, came in at 56, which is a very strong reading above the estimate of 54.9. And if you look at the S&P Global U.S. Composite PMI, that came in at 55. Positive 0.8. So, you know, top level, it was a positive data print. Definitely a little bit of concern in the manufacturing area. Here's a quote from the chief business economist at PMI, at S&P Global, pardon. The flash PMI data signals a Goldilocks scenario at the start of the third quarter, with the economy growing at a robust pace while inflation moderates. So, I mean, look, Goldilocks sounds pretty good. One thing we always talk about here at Double Line is when things are great, it's easier for them to go the other way around. Not to try and, you know, be negative, but you have to be realistic. If things are humming along, it's a positive thing for the U.S. economy, but you just have to keep an eye on the ball here. Moving forward, on Thursday, we got the preliminary estimate for Q2 GDP, the advance estimate. And just to refresh our viewers' memories, there's three estimates to GDP. So, you know, this is the first estimate, and it's always the least accurate because of revisions. That said, it was a home run. Came in at positive 2.8% quarter over quarter real, which is, you know, fantastic relative to the estimate of 2.0%. So everyone saying we were in a recession, that's just like pretty resoundingly false based on this report. And it was a strong beat. I mean, there's no real way to look at that from a negative lens. When you dig into it, personal consumption, which is a 1.6% contribution, was made up from goods and services. Goods came in at 2.5, services 2.2. When you look at gross private investment, came in at 8.4, which is pretty big. It was a 1.46% contribution to the headline number. And digging into that, fixed investment was 3.6%, which is pretty strong for fixed investment. Changes in inventories was only a 0.82 contribution. So fixed investment was strong there. I mean, you had inventories helping. On the downside, you had net exports at minus 0.72% because imports were at 6.9%, which drug it down by 93 basis points, while exports were only 2%, which added 22 basis points. And then to wrap it up, we had government spending at 3.1%, which, you know, is definitely high considering the budget deficit. But these are the numbers. You know, it's a positive report. I don't really think there's a way to spin this negatively. If you want to kind of poke fun at professional economists a little bit, if you look at the Q1 advance estimate, there were 69 economists' estimates, and they were all wrong. They were all too high. For the Q2 estimate that we just discussed, there were 69 estimates and 68 were too low. There was only one that was kind of similar-ish. Nomura came in at 3.0. So, you know, it just goes to show the dismal science remains dismal. But I think that not to disparage economists' work. I mean, it's necessary work, but it's a tough game. It's a tough business. So I don't really think that there's much negativity in that preliminary GDP report. Mr. Lau, what do you think?
Yeah, I think, I've said it before, I think a lot of these forecasts just end up being people putting their fingers up in the air and taking their best guess, right? But I think, the direction was strong in terms of the pickup in the Q over Q annualized over the previous quarter. There are always naysayers out there. So I think what people have been picking apart in this most recent GDP report are the usual suspects. They're saying that, okay, well, the government is contributing to a portion of the overall, component of the positive GDP, but that's always the case, right? I mean, the government tends to pick up the slack. But, it's hard to argue with that strong contribution that you got from the personal consumption side, so those two hand in hand, really helped. And when you look at some of the numbers that Mark Kimbrough put aside, it's, the personal consumption, the consumer side did contribute about 1.6 percent of that 2.8 real GDP number that we got on the annualized basis versus the government side, which contributed about half a point there. So, certainly the consumers are in there really, pulling their weight. And then, of course, you always get when you have that positive contribution from inventories, the naysayers will always be eager to point to that, saying that, that's not necessarily, stimulated the economy. But, when I was looking at the last print the first quarter print for 2024, there is a drag by inventories by, I want to say, 40 basis points. So, at that period of time, people don't, the naysayers don't really come out and point to that. So, inventories can, do fluctuate quite a bit on a quarter over quarter basis. This happens to be a build, and I wouldn't detract too much from that, especially on the back of the fact that, again, the consumer side was just so strong.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree with that. But, take everything with a grain of salt. This is the advanced estimate. There will be two revisions, so see how it shakes out. But, generally the market reacts to this print the most. So that's generally the way things go forward. So yep. Thursday, we got initial jobless claims came in at 235,000, pretty similar to the estimate. And very similar to the prior 245,000. Continuing claims came in at 1,851,000. Once again, very similar to the prior. So nothing really new to report here. Still minorly elevated relative to the low levels we saw 6 to 12 months ago, but still nothing of a shock. We got durable goods on Thursday. They came in at minus 6.6%. Which was a huge, miss. But there is a lot of volatility in the headline. If you dig in and look at the ex transportation figure, we actually had positive contributions. Durables ex transportation came in at 0.5%. So, a lot of the travails that certain major aerospace companies going through right now is weighing on this. So I think that that's kind of an idiosyncratic explanation for why you had such a negative headline number. And then if you kind of dig down further, cap goods orders, non-defense ex air came in at positive 1.0%, and cap goods shipments, non-defense, ex air looking, okay. So that's kind of the wrap there. And then finally on Friday, we got personal income for June, and personal income came in at 0.2%. Not, it's kind of a miss versus the estimate of 0.4%. And personal spending, the American way, came in at 0.3%, a little higher than income. And that was right on the estimate. Digging into it a little bit, looks like, this isn't a report with a lot of meat in there, just a pretty, pretty okay number. And nothing's really like popping out to me with respect to the details there. And lastly, we got PCE prices, which the market was definitely like, you know, waiting with bated breath for. That said, by the time PCE comes out at the end of the month, most of the factors that go into it are known. So there's generally not huge surprises in PCE, but nonetheless, the PCE price index for June came in on a month over month basis at 0.1%, right on the estimate. PCE price index year over year at headline came in at 2.5%. And the core PCE came in at 0.2%. And that puts the core PCE year over year index at 2.6%. So, you know, if the Fed can look at that and say, okay, inflation's kind of like moderated, but it isn't at their target. The market definitely thinks that this leaves the door open for the Fed to cut. And we'll talk about that in a bit when we go into some of the kind of Fed speak stuff overview, but the market's expecting a cut in September. We'll see if that comes to transpire. But overall, PCE is in the kind of zone where the Fed is going to be happier, not on their target, but better than it has been.
Yeah. So, I mean, with that, it'll be interesting to see what Powell says next week at the Wednesday presser. This week we had it was a quiet period for the Fed for Fed speak, as we do have that meeting next week. As you mentioned before, right now the market is fully pricing the full one cut, but not until the September meeting. Through the year end, it looks like the market's fully pricing in two cuts, but it is building steam to perhaps a little bit get some traction into, you know, getting into a possible three cuts before year end, but we'll see. As of right now, again, we're not seeing that second full cut priced in until December meeting, but we'll see how that evolves. I'm sure it'll move a little bit after we hear Powell speak next week. And then with that, just for completeness, the first full third cut is pricing in January of 2025 meeting. So not much has really changed versus what we saw in the probabilities versus last week, but it is building a little bit more steam towards potentially having a third cut, three full cuts priced in for 2024. But we shall see. In terms of things to keep an eye on next week, pretty busy week. You know, kicking it off on Tuesday, July 30th, we'll have the housing price index data come out from the S&P CoreLogic. We'll see how the housing market, if it continues to run hot, or if we'll see a little bit of abatement there. Also on Tuesday, we'll have the jobs opening data. That's part of the data series that in the past, Jerome Powell had referenced as something that he does consider, especially when he takes that ratio of job openings relative to the number of individuals who are unemployed. I believe the last number that we had on that ratio was 1.2. So that's come down pretty significantly relative to the point in time when he spoke about it about a year or so ago first, when it was rather elevated. And then on Wednesday, we'll have the FOMC rate decision. Again, no cuts expected, but everyone's going to be tuning in, or at least will be tuning in on the desk there to the presser to see what kind of pearls of wisdom that we might be able to glean from Jerome Powell. And then on Thursday, we'll have the ISM manufacturing data, where it's expected to improve slightly while remaining in contractionary territory, but it is expected to improve to 49.0 there. And then Friday, we'll have the Pizza Friday data come out. That's what a lot of people will be looking for. It does come out 2 days after the Fed, so we'll see how the markets tie in together through that through that period of next week there. But right now it's expected to be a little bit fewer changes in terms of the non-farm payrolls. It's expected to be about 175,000 relative to the 206,000 print that we saw last month for the month of June. I'm sure we'll be keeping an eye out importantly for what type of revisions we'll have seen to the initial reports of both the June, as well as see if there's any revisions to the May data as well. But the market, as we've said in the past, tends to fade those revisions, which have lately come in lower than the advance prints. And instead, we'll focus on that initial advance print for the month of July. So things that we'll be talking about next week. And then, of course, with it alongside that, establishment data. We'll also have the household survey, which includes the unemployment rate. That's expected to stay flat at 4.1%, same as the as we saw in the month of June. And then right now, we'll always be talking about the labor force participation rate that had ticked up a little bit and was part of the rationale for why people thought that the unemployment rate had picked up from 4.0 to 4.1 last month. We'll see what happens in next Friday's data point there. But that pretty much wraps it up. It's definitely going to be a busy week in terms of data for next week's episode of minutes here. We'll be talking about all that as well as wrapping up the full month of July market returns there. But I want to thank everyone for tuning in today.
Yeah, thanks to all of our listeners out there today on DL Minutes. Hit us up on X at DLine Minutes or send us an email at minutes@doubleline.com with any of your questions, comments, or suggestions.
Yeah, so since it's Fed Day next Wednesday, we'll also have Jeffrey Gundlach on CNBC on the closing bell segment there shortly after Jerome Powell speaks, but somewhere around noon Pacific time. And then about an hour after that, we'll have Kenny Shinoda on Bloomberg TV at their closing episode there as well. A couple things to check out on the YouTube. We've got Jeff Sherman giving a macro presentation, giving his latest thoughts on growth, inflation, as well as the credit cross currents that we're seeing today. And then on our LinkedIn account there, you can search for Double Line LinkedIn Between the Lines. That blog for the most current week is titled Forecasting is Hard. This is talking about CBO projections there. So we'll see how the dismal science, what our macro team thinks about the dismal science from economists there. But don't forget, you can always find out more information about Double Line as well at doubleline.com. I want to thank everyone for tuning in as always, and I hope everyone has a great weekend.
This presentation was recorded on the date indicated. Views and opinions expressed herein are those of the individual and do not necessarily reflect the views of Double Line Capital LP, its affiliates, or employees, should not be construed as an offer to buy or sell any securities, and are subject to change without notice. Double Line has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. The presentation represents Double Line's intellectual property. No portion of this presentation may be published, reproduced, transmitted, or rebroadcast in any media, in any form, without the express written permission of Double Line. Double Line has no obligation to provide any updates or changes. To receive permission from Double Line, please contact media at doubleline.com. Neither Double Line nor any of its affiliates makes any representations or warranties regarding the accuracy or completeness of the statements or any information contained in this material. Liability, including any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage, is explicitly disclaimed. Double Line is not providing any financial, economic, legal, accounting, or tax advice. The receipt of this presentation by any listener should not be construed as the provision of investment advice by any Double Line entity or individual, nor does it imply that such person becomes a client of any Double Line entity. The portfolio risk management process includes an effort to monitor and manage risk, but it does not imply low
risk. Copyright 2024, Double Line Capital.